Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you, and welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Art Halverson, when Bedford County Speaks continues. WBFD!
Some time back, they did a survey and they found that lots of people who lived within a few miles of the Liberty Bell or the Statue of Liberty never visited either place. That happens around here, too. Just after the start of the French and Indian War, Bedford County became the gateway to the West with the opening of the Forbes Road, which we now call Route 30. In 1794, President George Washington had to come here to quell the Whiskey Rebellion. By 1913, the first transcontinental road for motor cars, the Lincoln Highway, was dedicated here, and the legendary Bedford Springs Resort still welcomes people from all over the world. With this kind of legacy, why keep it a secret? Spread the word about Bedford County, the history, the charm, and the regal Alleghenies. Bedford County, America's open door to the West.
We are welcoming Art Halverson of beautiful downtown Man's Choice here for the second time on our radio program. So I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. Well, Art, of course, has made a slight alteration in his career since he's been a captain in the Coast Guard and later a business person here in Bedford County. And we want to talk to you about your run for Congress and your almost win in the primary last time. I got to ask you, this is not an unusual thing to do. Of course, it's been done since the 1930s and 40s in this country, where a person may run as a declared candidate, say, in the Republican Party, and end up being the Democratic nominee, but that's what you did.
Typically, in those cases, somebody requested to and campaigned as a write-in in the other party, and we didn't do that. We had very limited resources, and we devoted them to defeating Mr. Schuster in the Republican primary. But there's an organic move on the part of conservative Democrats. They wrote me in, and it was a surprise to us, as it was to anyone else, that we received the nomination.
Did you try to get that nomination?
No,
from
we didn't.
Democrats?
It was a spontaneous act on the part of Democrats themselves who wrote us in. And, of course, the party doesn't accept me. I'm a Christian conservative Republican, always will be, and I'm not a Democrat, but I'm nominated by the Democrats.
Would you consider yourself part of the deplorables?
Well, I'm probably part of the disruptors, because I have a grief with both parties, my own party particularly. That's why I got started, is because I saw what was happening in my own Republican Party, and I became so disgusted by it that I said, we've got to change this. And one thing I could do is run against Bill Schuster, because I thought he was, and I know that he is, a big part of the problem.
Speaking of Schuster and his party, this puts you in kind of an interesting position. If we didn't know you, we might think that you're going to support Ed Cernick and Hillary Clinton and all that,
right,
being a Democratic person
nominee.
That's going
right.
to be nominee.
Yeah.
So did you have to register as a Democrat to do this?
Interestingly,
how's it work?
I was nominated by Democrats, but they knew they were nominating a Christian conservative Republican, and that's what they got. And I'm not changing. I will be a Republican in Congress when I'm elected on November 8th. And I'm a lifelong Republican and proud of it, though I want to bring some change to our party.
Our guest is Art Halverson, and he is the Democratic nominee for Congress this time around. In just a few weeks, we'll be voting for all of you.
Right.
And I think one of the things that is of interest to me is you seem to be using part of the system, mm-hmm. like tricking the system, which is exactly what you've accused Mr. Schuster of doing as an incumbent.
Yeah, so, of course I'm doing no such thing. The system actually ended up working for me. I didn't trick anything. Mm-hmm. I pursued a Republican, straight-up Republican ballot position by getting almost 3,500 signatures on a petition Hundreds of workers went around the district, and we got on the Republican primary ballot, and we came just within a whisker of defeating Schuster. It turns out it was within one vote per precinct of voters who had voted for Schuster. If they had voted for me, we would have won. One per precinct. That's how close it was.
Well, Art,
then,
sorry,
as a result of the, I think, broad support of our platform and our conservative positions, our character that we have espoused and lived and demonstrated to the public, that even the Democrats realized that they wanted to support me, and they did. And, of course, they couldn't vote because of the closed primary system in Pennsylvania for a Republican, but they could write me in on their ticket, which they did.
How many Democrat votes did you get?
About 1,200.
So
you need 1,000.
You need 1,000. So you got 1,200 in the 9th district. Is that correct?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So that includes the multiple pieces of counties that the 9th district incorporates. So what's been the conservative voters' reaction to this? I mean,
totally supportive.
Well, I mean, I got to think that if I were a Republican conservative and I'm watching this guy, I want to be elected, all of a sudden become a Democrat so he can get into this general
election. Yeah, see, that's it, though. I haven't become a Democrat. Yeah. I'm the same person I was. I'm the same Republican that ran for the Republican primary seat, but I have accepted the Democratic nomination. But that doesn't change me. It doesn't change anything about me. It just means that I'm on the ballot. So it was an opportunity, frankly. The decision was difficult because of the points that you bring up. Mm-hmm. I certainly anticipated that some people would be confused by it, and it could appear to be misleading. But I haven't misrepresented anything. I've said I'm a conservative Christian Republican in that order. You've already heard me say it three times. Nobody should have any doubt of who I am. Mm-hmm. Just because my name's on the ballot and it says Dem doesn't mean I'm a Dem. And that's what's unusual about this process, is you can be nominated and written in by either party, regardless of your party affiliation. And that's what's happened.
Our guest is Art Halverson, and he is the Democratic nominee for the 9th District Congress, running against Bill Schuster, who has been an incumbent for many, many years here, as was his father, as we all know.
Yeah, 44 years, and I think that's
years
long
total.
Enough. Yes, sir.
Okay. I knew you'd know that.
Well, they got a kind of a lock on it, and it's time to pick the lock.
Well, let me ask you some more general questions about this business of being a congressman. I think many of the constituents feel, and we certainly hear it at the radio station, that the Congress in general, maybe not just Bill Schuster, but the Congress, has let the voters down by failing to take on the executive. And
right.
We've had several terms now, 8 years worth of President Obama and 8 years worth of congressional district people getting reelected every 2 years.
Right.
And they really haven't done much to defend the Republican position.
That's right.
So what would you do if you get elected? How would you do
reiterate your point. Yeah. Not only have they failed, they have enabled the president. The bills that they write, most of the bill is written by the secretary, in other words, on the executive branch. So they close out the bill as the secretary directs. So they're not even doing their job, which is to write the legislation. They're the ones that are supposed to write the law, and they write so much, and then they give it to the executive branch, the president, and let them finish it out, write all the regulations and so forth. They implement it, and it's a total abdication, in my view. So they have failed us. They're not doing their job. They're on vacation most of the time. They only work about 100 days a year. And that's hard to call work because it's such a plush, perk-ridden, pork-barreled operation down there. I'm just disgusted by it, and every American should be disgusted. We pay them some of the highest wages in the land, and they're just not doing their job.
Would you prefer to have a part-time Congress, a part-time job,
hourly rate? I think absolutely should be a part-time. I think they could go to it. It's done in many states very effectively, and the time they spend down there for the work, if they would do the work, then they need to be down there and do it. But at the current rate, they're getting paid full-time and only working part-time.
Yeah. Well, this brings us to the kind of the next point I wanted to ask you about, and that is, I know you're very well versed in this particular subject, and that's the national defense.
Right.
Donald Trump has stated repeatedly in his campaign for president that the national defense overall, the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, everybody, is in serious decline. We've lost thousands of men. We have material that doesn't work. Our ship levels are from almost a high of 600 down to 200 and something, and the something is getting very, very small. The Air Force is copying spare parts off of planes in Arizona.
Right.
What can you do as a congressman to get this fixed?
Sure. Well, here's the issue. All of that is true to a degree, but we still have the best equipped, best trained military, most powerful force the world has ever known in our military. The real problem, besides materiel readiness, is the social experiment that's going on, sexual preference, transgender surgeries that are being funded. The biggest contention and controversy for the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, is the amount of religious freedom that is being curtailed, the rules of engagement that our warfighters are forced to contend with. In other words, they get an award for not killing the enemy. That's just preposterous. So we could spend all the money in the world and continue to have the best military, but if we don't have leadership who lets the military do their job, not tie them down with all these controversial social issues and experiments that are going on in the military, that has to stop. And so what I would be doing is being in the forefront, demanding that those things be resolved and taken off the plate of our military commanders.
What is your position about putting women in combat roles?
I do not support that. I don't think women have a rightful place in the military, and they have for decades, and I support that. I was at the Coast Guard Academy when women were introduced to the academy. I was part of the leadership class that made that transition. I support women in the military. I don't believe women were designed, however, to fight in combat. I think it's a distraction for men because men have a tendency to protect women, and I think mm-hmm. that's an appropriate role and should be protected, and I think men should fight the combat and women have an appropriate support role.
So that would further extend, obviously, to the highly specialized Delta Force and SEAL teams. And
absolutely.
Like that.
That's part of that social experimentation. We are actually, they won't tell you, I'll tell you, that they're lowering standards in order to make, women were not designed to be doing 25 right. pull-ups.
Right. Our guest is Art Halvorsen, and we are going to speak to Mr. Halvorsen when we return about some of the national things, because the congressional office obviously is a national government post when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Long before electronic ignitions, in-dash entertainment, alloy wheels, and moonroofs, our family has provided your family with worry-free transportation and reliable service. One of the great things about living in Bedford County is that all of us still appreciate personal service and the value of a reputation. So many things we want today are measured only by appearance and price. At Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, we strive to do more for you so that we can succeed. In all the years we've been in business, we've never lost sight of the fact that purchasing a car is a big deal for any family, including my own. Your car or truck is your connection to the outside world, whether it be your job, church, or family. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru understands your needs, and that is why we invite you to visit us first. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, for buying a car or truck, is always worry-free.
This is Kevin Hampson of the Bedford Fall Foliage Festival, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
We have returned to Peter's Coffee Shop right here on Richard Street and Pitt Street in beautiful downtown Bedford, and it is indeed beautiful as we speak to Art today. A beautiful fall day. Fall foliage is upon us. We're going to be having that very shortly, Art, and these streets will be full.
Looking forward to it, yes.
A zillion people all running around.
It's a wonderful event for
looking
Bedford
for
County. Yes.
Shaded trees and probably coffee at this place. Who knows what? I want to get back to Donald Trump a minute. Are you going to support Donald Trump?
I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. I'm not going to give him my overt support yet. I'm withholding it. He's making progress, but he has a lot more progress to make. He's not acted presidential up to this point, in my view, except rare exceptions. I believe he's capable of doing the job. He certainly will not support. I'm a never Hillary person. She's unfit for office, and she should be in jail. And frankly, I think her medical problems, actually, before the election even arrives 60 days from now, she may not even be the candidate.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump did successfully surpass 16 people, which is an accomplishment
in
itself for a guy like you.
I can give an explanation for that, though. I believe the media had a big part of that. But shame on those other 16 who didn't figure it out in time in order to defeat him. He won.
Well, if we have a Donald Trump presidency, or a Hillary Clinton presidency for that matter, but a Donald Trump presidency, it could be that the whole congressional delegation and the United States Senate could be a pretty different crowd. There's a lot of concern, at least in the media I read in here, that if there's going to be this kind of president, we're going to have a lot of maverick, off-the-wall congressmen and senators are going to be swept in under this whole get rid of the bums attitude. Yeah. Well, do you feel that's happening?
Well, of course,
an illusion?
Of course, the primaries are mostly over, and so mostly, as usual, right. The establishment crowd, like Bill Schuster, won the primaries for the Republican side. So I would bring attention to one thing you said, maverick off the wall. I don't know that maverick necessarily means off the wall. I do think, though, we need some leaders, and sometimes they come in the form of maverick. Sometimes they come in the form of disruptors, because if you're going to break the status quo, which is absolutely what's necessary, it's what Trump represents, right? He was sort of maverick and came in and did things in an unusual way and got people's attention, took really the oxygen out of the air, captured the media's attention, and all the cameras were on him. What was the next thing he was going to say? Too bad the other guys didn't figure out that was what was going to work this year and tried to do some of that. But if America's on a path to decline, it's because the establishment has a stranglehold over the economy, over the government, over business. And until we break that stranglehold, we're going to continue to decline. So what I represent, maybe a maverick, is to come in and say, we're not going to continue doing the same things. Absolutely, I will not support continuing to do the same things. Funding abortion. Funding the stranglehold of regulations, continuing to increase funding on EPA so that they can shut down our coal mines and pursue these agendas of the left, which are destroying our economy and our place in the world, frankly, our rightful place, our responsibility in the world. So we need some folks who will stand up and do things differently, and I think, and congratulations to Donald Trump for that. He figured it out, and he hits a couple of chords, and he kept playing them loudly in an unusual way, so he kept the same message, just with a new, fresh face, and stayed in the front and won.
Let me ask you about regulations. It's been said that regulations are, in fact, our new government. We don't
That's
have an
exactly
elected government
right.
anymore. We have a regulated government.
That's
How do
exactly
you feel
right.
about that?
We no longer have a free economy. We no longer have free enterprise. We have a regulated, unlimited government that has taken its place, and that's because we have career politicians. Those career politicians, the way they stay in office is to get reelected, and to get reelected is to means they need big donors, they need big business, and they figured out how to get the money so they can control the market, the political market, and to give favors back to those investors, if you will, who are donating to their campaigns, they have to offer regulations. See, those regulations help the big guys and they kill the little guys. And that's exactly what's happening. We've got more and more, fewer and fewer on top, or more big guys and fewer little guys is what I'm trying to say. So the regulations are putting a stranglehold. That's the way I call it.
So tied to the regulations themselves is what everyone talks about, corporate tax relief. A lot of people view that corporations don't pay enough taxes. And yet a lot of people, especially some of your colleagues, say, oh, no, we're paying way too many taxes.
We pay the highest taxes in the world. That's right. The problem.
Yeah.
But the regulations allow, and the big companies can afford to pay it. But see, well, also what they're doing is doing business overseas. And so they're not paying those. They're avoiding those taxes. American companies that have to stay here aren't big enough to go overseas are paying the taxes. The big companies are overseas. They can keep. We have almost $2 trillion of Apple Computer has $600 billion themselves, one company, held offshore, because to bring it onshore, they'd have to pay the 35% corporate tax rate.
Do you agree with Mr. Trump's stipulation that if we eliminated this, we could bring them, we could entice them back?
Yes, we need to repatriate that money is what
right.
it's called, and
right.
it can be done with a tax holiday. That money should be invested in America, not mm-hmm. in other countries,
right.
and that's what's happened. So our tax structure is totally upside down. Corporations really don't pay taxes. You've heard that axiom, because they just pass it on to the customers, and so the cost of goods are higher, the higher the taxes. So those higher taxes have enabled the government to get bigger, to do what governments do, which is to write regulations and write laws. In our case, as we talked about, the Congress isn't doing it. They're giving it to the executive branch. So the executive branch is getting more powerful. The presidency is getting bigger. the power of the purse, which our founders vested in the Congress, is getting less and less because we just have career car dealers who are career politicians in Washington. They don't know what they're doing. They're not leaders, never served in the military, and they're abdicating their responsibilities. And so the cycle is one of decline for the nation.
So if President Trump were to introduce a bill to the Congress and said, I want to impose these tariffs on people that leave the country with their jobs, would you support such a move?
You have to take it on a case-by-case basis. There is, you know, the founders saw tariffs as a means of raising money for the federal government. That was the plan originally. Mm-hmm. Instead, we've gone to globalization. First of all, I'm a free trade guy, but I believe in bilateral trade agreements with other countries who are friendly to the United States, who have mutual interests and support us, and we support them. We've gotten away from that, and so that has to be understood that I'm a free trader, I'm not a globalist, which is what we have become. With these multinational trade deals like the TPP, Trans-Pacific Trade Policy, it sets up a third order supreme organization that tells it robs us of our own sovereignty. So I want to get away from those. I was talking about that before Trump was talking about it. It's bad for the country. Bill Schuster supported fast tracking that. We call it Obama trade. He was fast tracking Obama trade. I told him not to support it. I wrote letters and published letters in the paper not to support. He supported it anyway. Well, lo and behold, Trump gets nominated. Now the light comes on for Schuster, and he doesn't support that anymore. He doesn't know what he's doing. He needs to be replaced.
I think that the thing that everybody's thinking about, and there's really not much talk about it, is the economy has to be improved. We're at a stagnant economy for some years. So nothing works unless we fix that. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Here's the key to economics, confidence. Until the American public and our business community and our entrepreneurs have confidence that they can make a return on a dollar invested, they're not going to invest that money. So what's happening is we have these cockamamie ideas that Mr. Schuster has supported, Keynesian economics, where the government takes money from the people, taxes, or they just borrow it. That's typically what they're doing now. That's why we have $20 trillion in debt, thinking that they can stimulate the economy. The government can't stimulate anything. Everything they do, the Obama stimulus, the economy was improving at that time. It destimulates the economy when the government spends so much money, which is now close to $4 trillion a year. We have to reduce the size of the federal government, cut the regulations, allow people to invest their own money. That's where the money is in the pockets of the people. But without confidence that you're going to get a return on your investment, you're not going to invest. And that's why we're stagnant.
Talk about something that's kind of related to what we're talking about with Fed regulations and federal intrusion, and that is into our school system.
Good.
Even the First Lady of the United States is now telling us what kind of food we should have
in
the middle school cafeteria. So would you advocate an end to this sort of thing and maybe get these schools back to people like Alan Sell here in Bedford County who does a pretty darn good job of doing that?
Does a great job. Yeah. And my daughter, who just was married this weekend, is a graduate and beneficiary of that great job that mm-hmm. Bedford County did. We have great ideas here. I love public schools, but my family was, we were military. We moved around. We homeschooled a lot, but we did parochial schools. We did independent Christian schools. We did public schools. We did school choice. We practiced it.
Right.
We lived it, and it's been a terrific, we benefited from that in a terrific way. I support school choice. I support public schools. You know, it's not an either or. People say, well, you can't support school choice because public schools will lose all their funding. That's nonsense. That's not going to change. But by reducing the load on public schools and giving students, matching students up with the style of learning in a different environment, a homeschool, in a charter school, all those things are emerging, but they need to be supported and encouraged, and people need to know that those options exist. And that's how we solve the problem.
Well, the Pennsylvania Education Association Union, of course, is vehemently against these charter schools and so forth for fear that they will lose union wages by becoming
Look, I'm not against unions, but sometimes unions are their own worst enemy, and in this case they are, because and they're also hurting the country because they're trying to force everybody into one mold, and public schools are only one option, a great option. Needs to be encouraged, just like it's being done here in Bedford County. It can be done other places. But, you know, it's like $30,000 a student to, quote, unquote, educate a student in Philadelphia. So we wonder where all the money is going in state money. It's going to Philadelphia schools. And they're not educating anybody.
One of the advantages that people see in your opponent is that he is the chairman of the Transportation Committee in Congress.
Right. And show me the money,
such,
Bill. Show me the money.
As such, wields a lot of power in improving transportation, and we have several highways with he and his father's name on it.
So, which is an embarrassment to me.
But do you feel that's an impairment to you at all?
Not at all.
Someone who's coming in really without any committees at all?
First of all, it's an embarrassment to me and to our region that a disgraced congressman who had to leave Congress, Bill's dad, put his name on highways. Those should be Gold Star Memorial highways. People died. That's who paid for those with their blood. They paid for those highways, not Bill, Bud Schuster. Bud Schuster used our money and put his name on it. That's disgraceful to me. Bill is doing the same thing with 219. Yes, we have good roads. I drive on roads. I love roads. But the way we're doing it is the wrong way. Here's the Bill Schuster way. We have a highway transportation fund, trust fund in Washington, HTF. That's funded by your fuel taxes at the pump, 18.4 cents. It's $35 billion a year is what comes in. He spent $61 billion for 5 years. 35 comes in, 61 goes out. Do the math, right? $26 billion debt every year. He would say, oh, no, it's not debt, it's covered. We take money out of the Federal Reserve, but we're selling the Strategic Oil Reserve. That's a reserve fund. That's for our national security, and he's selling it pennies on the dollar to help make up the difference. He's not managing the highway fund. He's using it for his own political benefit. He's using it to get Chuckie Schumer's vote in New York City to fund the subway system in New York, our highway dollars. He's using it to fund the buses in Philadelphia. That's not helping Bedford County. That's not helping central and western Pennsylvania. So it's not working. He's not doing it right, and we can do better.
Okay, one final question, and that is you mentioned the debt. What could you do as an individual congressman, introduce a bill, whatever?
We need a free spending.
I mean, this debt and, of course, the subsequent deficit as it creates will go on forever if we can do something. And we don't have forever.
Right. We need a cap, balance, and grow. We talked before about establishing confidence in the American taxpayer to invest their money to grow the economy, which is where growth will come from. But we need to show some spine in Washington, cap the spending. I'm not saying do any cuts. I'm saying cap it. Cut and freeze what we have and manage better what we already are spending. As I say, close to $4 trillion is managed by the federal government. That's more than enough money to get the job done. $600 billion of that is national security, which should be the number one priority for the federal government, and then the justice system. Everything else is on the table. We have the whole departments of transportation, education, environmental protection are all redundant to departments we already have at the state level. We don't need to be duplicating those things, and we don't need to be spending that money from Washington. Let the states do what the states are designed to do, the experiments to do things better, get the federal government out of that business, and we can start by freezing the spending in Washington just for 3 years, and you'll watch this. That's a simple solution, and watch this economy grow.
Art Appleson, we're out of time, but thank you very much for taking the time, my time and your time, to to do this today. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Lloyd.
And again, we want to thank Hebrews Coffee Shop for letting us use this as a portable studio. And
absolutely.
You've been very good. And sure going to be a fun election in November.
Boy,
we have a Republican running as a Democrat. We have a Republican running as a Republican and incumbent for some years. So it ought to be interesting to watch. And I will suggest to any of you listening to this, please, please vote. It's very, very important you get out and do that.
You have to vote.
Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.